Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How are you doing, friend?
Girl. I am. Oof, it is. These days are so hard. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not unique to us. Like, several mm-hmm. of my friends are, like, mm-hmm. in the similar position. So, I mean, not schadenfreude, but, like, that's somewhat comforting. But it's...
Yes.
It's
I
hard.
Have decided that there's some sort of cosmic... moon star alignment. I heard there's a new moon, and I was like, yeah, that sounds right. Let's say that that's what's going on. So
I mean, well come on with it, moon shit. Because I'm done. I'm like, done.
I have things to do, moon.
You know, like, it's so real. It's so real. Also, like, it's global, right? It's just everything happening at
yeah,
once.
Yeah, well, we all have the same moon. Of course it's global.
Oh, no. I mean, like, it's compounded, you know?
Yes,
not like the cosmos
yes,
only. It's yes. all compounded.
Made me think of, do you remember Fievel Goes West? And there's, like, a song where there's the mouse is looking out the window, and he's like, underneath the same big sky. Do you know? No. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, it's, I guess, but I feel like we didn't have, like, a VCR for a long time growing up.
I don't know where I saw Fievel Goes West. I was about to be like, oh, they didn't have Fievel in Minnesota.
Goodbye. No, you had a VHS and y'all had some tapes.
I did. Totally had a VHS.
I feel like the first, like, cartoon movie I remember is actually mm-hmm. like The Little Mermaid. I don't remember Bambi, really. Ooh. All of those things are kind of lost to me. Fievel Goes West. What is the other one with the chipmunks? Not Rescue Rangers, but there's, like, another one. Some chipmunks.
Yeah, that's Rescue Rangers. No, he's not. That's not.
Wait, what's the one?
That's not Fievel.
Wait, what's the one with the monkey and the tiger?
Oh, Jungle Book.
The Jungle Book. Yeah, that one's lost on me, too. People are like, y'all know The Jungle Book? And I'm like, I don't know none of that. I mean, we were watching, like, you know, Wesley Snipes movies. That's what we were doing in my house.
Ooh, wait. No.
Listen. wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it.
Hello and welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says, we all know how many rocks you got. We all know you're still Jenny from the block. Can we please move on? I'm Francesca Ramsey. I'm an actress. I'm a producer, a writer, and former graphic designer.
And I'm DeLon Grant. I'm an actor, a singer, a photographer, and a writer. And class, we are switching things up and reviewing a new piece of media that is it new? I guess, well, it's different. It's different.
It's new. It's not a throwback.
Yeah, it's not. And it is setting the internet ablaze. That's mm-hmm. right. We mentioned Jenny from the Block. We were talking about J-Lo's new album and movie musical, This Is Me Now, which is actually a sequel to her 2002 album, This Is Me Then.
That is correct. Jennifer Lopez, aka J-Lo, aka Jenny from the Block, dropped a new album in February 2024, but that was not all that she gave the world, mm-mm. along with an album. So she gave us what she keeps insisting is not a movie or a musical, and is definitely not a music video, but it is a film of some sort. This Is Me Now, a love story, along with a behind-the-scenes making-of documentary entitled The Greatest Love Story Never Told, which we will get into that title and the documentary.
Well, here's the thing, J-Lo. If it's not this, it's not that. You need to tell us what it is, because I'm still stuck on what it is. Like, if it's not a musical movie, which is what I think it is, then it shouldn't be confused with a movie musical, which is a piece of musical theater that has been made into a movie. But then there's a visual album, which is a conceptual album of visuals, you know, that conceptualize mm-hmm. and enhance an actual album.
Yes.
What is it? Did she create a new artistic genre, or?
You know, I'm not gonna, she created something. And class, to be fair, we're not just being shady. We will be shady at many points in this episode, but I watched the making of documentary and there are so many conversations where people are straight up saying, no, 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 it's not a musical. No, 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 it's not a movie. And then someone calls it a music video and literally J-Lo's manager looks like he's about to bite someone's head off. He's like, it is not a music video. It's like, wow.
I remember, it's literally just, he's in the frame and they're at some kind of table, some kind of meeting.
Table. Yes.
And he literally leans over and stops the whole meeting dead. And it's like, it is not a music video. Well, what the fuck is it then?
A journalist from The Guardian called it a therapy musical biopic.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It doesn't.
But also, listen, the making of movie that you also talked about, the behind the scenes doc, The Greatest Love Story Never Told. The title is sort of cliche, but it's
very cliche. How is it never told? You're telling it to us right now.
Well, and we have actually, the internet works, right? So we have all of the documentation of all of the love stories you've ever had. But it's on brand, right? Like, clearly J-Lo is in love with being in love. She's in love with love.
Oh, Jennifer Lopez loves being in love. She loves being married. She's at 800 movies where she's getting married. But most importantly, J-Lo is in love with herself. Mm. And I think that's what I hope we all take away from this episode. Because we have lots to unpack about this. Class, if you have not watched this musical movie that's not a movie or a musical, and is definitely not a music video, or the documentary that's making this whatever it is, and you haven't listened to the album, don't worry. A lot of people haven't listened to the album, and that's why J-Lo's canceling those tour dates. Fret not. We...
Wait, literally, though, she's canceled, like, I think 8 of them already.
Yes, because... No one's buying tickets. But you know what? Do not worry, class. You don't have to buy a ticket. You don't have to stream. We are going to be exploring the successes and failures of J-Lo's latest artistic endeavor, and then we're going to each offer how we would fix it. So let's dive in. This is me now, a love story. Let me fix it.
So, Fred, before we completely dive in, we have to have a discussion about what would J-Lo do? This movie musical thing sparked this hilariously brilliant and poignant notion for you based on J-Lo's basically like blind confidence. So tell the class about it, because I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, so I did a little review on the TikToks about this movie musical, not a musical, documentary, whatever. And I genuinely, after I watched the doc, I felt like I should be believing in myself more. Because throughout this documentary, everybody and their mama is telling J-Lo not to make this thing.
Her inner circle, her husband, her closest friends are saying no.
Every single person is like, I really just don't think this is the move. And J-Lo's like, no, I must. I must. Every single person, her business manager, her business partner, her husband, Jane Fonda gets on the phone and is like, I don't understand, J-Lo.
People are pulling out of the damn movie.
No one wants to do this. And J-Lo's like, what I'm going to do is whatever this is. And honestly, as you know, again, it's tongue in cheek, it's snarky. But I really felt like, God damn, I waste so much time and energy being extra hard on myself, striving for perfection, comparing myself to others, doubting if things are good enough. I have sat on so many good ideas. I have procrastinated. That's like my favorite technique to like,
tell me about
it. It's kind of like a self preventative measure where I like don't work as hard as I should, and then it flops, or I don't do well, and then I go, well, I didn't have enough time.
It's self-protective. Yeah,
exactly. It's self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And I left this fucking documentary and I was like, now what would J-Lo do? J-Lo would say, baby, I'm wearing a dress with the belly button down to here, and I'm in that bitch. And like, I need to do that more.
I hear you. Also, because like we've been telling her for years how stunningly beautiful she is, because she's stunningly gorgeous. Beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And so when you have people gassing you up like that, how can you not have the confidence? She's human, guys. I know she's insecure. But to your point, I have so much like self-loathing and insecurity that I've had to surmount. The idea that I could like put a syringe in my arm and just go, what would J-Lo do? Like, because in this industry, you have to have that level of confidence in yourself to do anything, to get up, right? So like,
I just think of those, like, what would Jesus do bracelets that everybody was wearing when we were like in middle and high school. Mm. And I, you know, gonna put it out there. I'm trying to get my coins together. I'm inspired by Miss J-Lo. I was like, let me get my coins together and give the girls a what would J-Lo do bracelet.
You know, they would sop it up.
They were in my comments being like, where is the link? Where is the Etsy store? And I was like, wow, not only did J-Lo inspire a joke, but I think she's inspiring me to make merch.
Like a revenue stream. Ready?
I mean, look, you know, she's a woman of the people. She's employing us. She's keeping us fed, right, whether we like it or not.
I do think, in all honesty, this is not to belittle her talent, right? I think she's talent light. Like, I don't. come on now. Come on. Listen.
It took you a minute to get through that sentence, but you did.
Come on.
She's
talented. But, you know, I think a big part of her success, like I said earlier, is her undeniable beauty. And let's be honest, like, pretty privilege is a major key to success in our industry. Like, and J-Lo is the poster child for it.
Oh, she is a card-carrying member. The card is never declining. She has a face. I mean, she's beautiful. The body is bodying. She's in her 50s. And she is and that's what I also liked about the documentary. She was in there working out. You know what I mean?
Every
like, she's
day.
Showing you, I'm not taking any shortcuts. And again, do what you want to do with your body, your face, whatever. But I love seeing that she's in that studio dancing. She's not in there singing, but she is dancing. And she is sweating, and she's gorgeous.
Yeah, and I mean, in the documentary in particular is what we're talking about. And that was inspiring, along with, like, what would J-Lo do? J-Lo's also up there working. She's also doing something, you know?
She sure is.
So, class, This Is Me Now, a love story, was released on our Amazon Prime Video accounts this past February. Now, let me say this. It is difficult to fully describe, like we keep saying, what this project is. But I do respect the ambition, despite the flaws in its concept. There are sections that feel like music videos, but then there are scenes where people are really acting in the storytelling, and the melding of the two makes the entire thing feel really conceptual, which I appreciate. Oh God, silence from this bitch. Just the pause.
Delon is the, again, I will say this till the cows come home. I love that you try to see the good in everybody and everything. Class, we just don't see this the same. The whole thing is confusing. It makes no damn sense, but I will try my hardest to give you a little, let me fix it, snarky recap. J-Lo plays a hopeless romantic, and we first see her in a motorcycle crash with a mysterious lover. We only see the back of his head. Spoiler alert, that is Ben Affleck. Then all of a sudden, we're inside a factory powered by an enormous heart. And if you're confused, I'm confused too. How the fuck did we get from the motorcycle to inside a factory? I don't know. Here we're inside this heart. I guess it's supposed to be J-Lo's. The pumps of... there's rose petals inside of the heart. Okay, this is a theme. You're going to notice a trend here. There's a lot of metaphors in this film. And the metaphors are never fucking explained. Like, they're just like, here's a metaphor. There's an alarm that goes off inside the factory. The heart's going to implode. There's a dance break. Everybody's wearing coveralls and goggles. Somebody puts a helmet on J-Lo.
They're dancing in mud.
There's mud flying around, which if you watch in the documentary, J-Lo cared very deeply about the consistency of that mud.
It couldn't be too grainy. It couldn't be too heavy.
Somebody was about to lose their job over that mud.
Well, and you know, I hear you. Like, here's the thing about like the beginning sequence. It's like all of these images that are kind of slammed together. Mm-hmm. And in the days of like music videos, you really didn't have to explain the images because you're there kind of like looking at the images, hearing the song, right? For the song. But when you're having like a narrative movie, it requires a little bit more sense to be made. So I did feel like the beginning was plausible as a music video. And then I do have to mention the CGI at the very beginning, which was was all of those very Francesca. I know you've fawned over this. Like it was like all coloring illustrated. Book of, like illustrations, and there was a voiceover where she was telling this kind of like star-crossed lovers story, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, but even that was so weird because it was like, when I was a little girl, my mom used to tell me this story, and you're like, okay, you're setting the foundation of this storybook romance, right? Mm. And my brain, the writer brain of mine, thought, okay, now we're going to pull back and we're going to see the book and she's going to be in bed reading to her daughter or something. No, we pull back and she's on a motorcycle. What? Yeah.
No, it didn't make sense. It made no sense. You know what? The factory would have even made more sense if, like, when the motorcycle crash happened, that they zoomed into her chest and then the heart was in, right? The factory was in her, was her body.
Literally anything other than motorcycle crash, now we're in a factory. What? You were just on a bike.
Right.
Now you're, you know, now you're a working girl?
Get out. So to save her broken heart, J-Lo has to enter one of the chambers of this heart in the factory that is now burning, right? Then we jump again to this very realistic present-day reality where J-Lo was reflecting on that motorcycle accident and the subsequent heartbreak with her therapist, who is played by rapper Fat Joe. And again, this is just a weird transition. We've had like five of them already, and we don't know where the story is going. So in this therapy session...
Wait, I'm sorry, can I just jump in for 1 second?
Please.
Now that Fat Joe is no longer fat, should he change his name?
Medium-sized Joe?
I love whatever he's done. I support you. I affirm you. Yeah. But it kind of feels like you are appropriating the plus-size struggle if you're going to call yourself Fat Joe and you like a 1X.
Well, what if he is like a poster child for those who formerly Fat Joe?
So then that's FF
Joe?
The artist formerly known as Fat Joe.
The formerly Fat Joe. Yo, I mean, you know, listen, he could still go back up. You never know.
That's true. I believe in him.
Right. So in this therapy session, a past abusive relationship comes up and we are teleported again to this literal glass house with said abusive boyfriend.
This is bad.
Yeah.
This is so bad. J-Lo is in the glass. And again, here we go with those metaphors, right? Like, it's too heavy-handed. She's in a glass house with this guy. And they're being all lovey-dovey. Mm. And then something sets him off.
She says that he is particular and he snaps.
He snaps. He punches the glass wall.
He spits out some alcohol.
He goes from 0 to 100 in a flash. And that's not to say that doesn't actually happen.
Sure.
You know, that does happen, I'm sure. But it's so jarring after we've now had all these quick cuts. There's no connective tissue that makes it feel like realistic. And then all of a sudden they break out into a fucking dance and they've got a bungee cord between them and they're fighting and dancing together. The song is on the rebound.
Rebound. Oh, she knows it though.
We go up.
Oh, wait,
and
she
down.
Knows it,
we
though.
Go right.
We go up and down. We get lost and found. We go round.
Wait, she has all these critiques, but she knows the damn tune. Remember what she said at the top? She's like, I don't know if you listened to it. Fran has listened to the whole album.
Listen, one thing about me, she has an ear. So I'm going to sometimes pick up a song or two. Okay, then they zoom out, and they're not just in a glass apartment. The whole building is glass.
Yes.
And everybody in the building is simultaneously in domestic violence
or
dance
or BDSM
situation?
Like there's a web holding somebody up.
It's... Now see again, what are the metaphors that you are trying to show us here? He's choking her with the bungee cord. Mm-mm. Eventually she cuts the bungee cord. Okay, she's cutting the cord. And then the whole house
there's the answer
shatters.
To the metaphor. There's a metaphor.
I know,
that's
but it's
answered.
Just like J-Lo, I just feel like it's so... We're going to jump around in terms of like the doc and the movie, but like in the documentary, J-Lo keeps being like, it's meta. You can't just say the words meta
and like not explain what's happening. But
especially if you want people to consume it and understand it, right? It's one thing if like you're like Paul Thomas Anderson, who's a film director and writer who has like very conceptual movies, or who's the one who wrote Mulholland Drive? Like that director is like really quirky. I forget his name, but like you watch his stuff and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but there's a narrative there. Like people have to semi get what you're doing. You know?
Yes. And it definitely feels like an exploration of doing the most. Mm-hmm. So many things are happening. After the abuse dance, the whole glass house shatters. And J-Lo walks through the glass. Beautiful. Still gorgeous.
Yes.
Bleeding. One cut above her eyebrow. One cut on her cheek. I mean, just the cuts are perfectly placed. And the clothes are shredded. Delicately. I mean, it's just, come on.
Girl. Well, and she says, fuck Libras at the end of it. But I think,
what does that mean?
Well, the boyfriend was a Libra, right? I think.
Right. But it also, it's like, it's so reductive. Like, are you saying that the domestic violence happened because you were dating a Libra?
I would argue.
What are you saying?
I would argue it's a very clunky transition to get to the next scene where they go to the Zodiac Council and, you know, but also I think it's it's an excuse to say why they weren't compatible, right? We weren't compatible because he's a Libra and I'm a such and such, but that doesn't excuse the abuse. I would also argue that like the music video of it all is like that truncated version of that bygone era of the music video, right? We're just giving images and we're making it very fraught. But again, if you're storytelling, like you need to like create an arc for us, like explain it a little bit more. Also, where do I fit in that? Where do I have empathy for you? You know what I mean?
You bring up a really great point about the storytelling of it all, because you're right. In a music video, which this is not, J-Lo's manager made sure that we know this is not a music video. In a music video, you don't have to give us backstory. We don't have to know anything about these people. We don't know who J-Lo is. We don't know, like, we know she's a hopeless romantic, but we know nothing about her. We don't know how long she's been with this man. We don't know anything about, like, the challenges of their relationship. And we don't have to see all of that stuff. But in dialogue, that's where you find those things out, you know? My friend Caitlin, who you've taken a class with, uses some really great, like, little handy ways to remind you of ways that you learn about character. You learn about character through memory, right? Remember when this happened. You learn about characters through metaphors, which I guess is what they're trying to do with this glass house.
That's a lot of them, though.
Yeah, and you also learn about character through their philosophy. You know, it's like my mother always says, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, I know things about you through that, right? And we don't get any of that. We just get thrown in.
You know what's really great about the memory and the philosophy thing? Those are very simple and clean ways of explaining it. And all of this is very maximalist, right? They're, like we said earlier, they're trying to do so much. She's trying to be beautiful. He's trying to be really menacing. They're both trying to act. They're both trying to dance the bungee cord. And there's violence. There's just so much happening, right?
Right.
That like it's there's no keel. There's no focus to it.
Yeah. And you brought up the Zodiac Council. And I think, you know, this scene zooms into the sky with the Zodiac Council. And I think what they're trying to say throughout is that that J-Lo's character really believes in the stars and astrology and the signs. And like, that's really important to her. Mm-hmm. But again, it's so clunkily done that it just feels like thrown together. It doesn't feel authentic to, like, instead of having these Zodiac characters talking about how much she cares about the Zodiac, like, I'd rather see her showing us, like, is she pulling a card every day? Is she, you know, looking through a telescope? And she's like, oh my God, look, there's the Big Dipper. This is a sign about, it's just like my mother always said, when you see the Big Dipper, that means your love is around the corner, like, whatever. But instead, we go to this fucking Zodiac people in the sky and they start talking to each other and it's a bunch of celebrities. It does feel hacky. Again, we've already had formerly Fat Joe, which is fine. But like then to go to a scene that's all high profile celebrities and people who are actors, like established actors and then non-actors. So you've got Trevor Noah, who's a stand-up. You got Kiki Palmer, actress, Kim Petras, singer, Post Malone, singer, Sofia Vergara doing Sofia Vergara, Jane Fonda, Jennifer Lewis playing Gemini,
brilliantly and so funny, Jay Shetty, who is a life coach podcaster, and Neil deGrasse Tyson. Why are they all together? Like, it's so jarring seeing them in one space like that.
It's a total grab bag. And you put in our doc, like, all of these people that passed on it, which is like, I mean, we have Taylor Swift, Lizzo, Ariana Grande, Will Smith, Jason Momoa, like Jennifer Coolidge. All these people were like, girl, I'm busy.
My favorite part, I have so many favorite parts in the doc, but one that really comes to mind is they're talking about who has passed. And somebody goes, Vanessa Hudgens, by the way. And J-Lo goes, for what? And someone goes, oh, she's not available. She's trying to shade Vanessa Hudgens. She's not trying to be in the movie anyway.
Oh, wow. I mean, one of the moments in the documentary that this is one of the moments that gave me a lot of empathy for her. I felt bad despite all of, you know, the reality of it being like, well, girl, no one really knows what it is. So how can they commit to it? When she's like, I know that they just don't want to do it. They're saying they're busy or they're not available because they don't want to do it because I've said it before. And I was like,
yeah. I mean, and shout out to her for like including that in there. But at the same time, it was so strange. But again, the what would J-Lo do of it all? She's not discouraged. Yes. Everybody is telling her like it's nobody wants to do this. And Jane Fonda, my favorite part of the film, Jane says no like 20 times before J-Lo strong arms her, full blown bribes her and is like, you only have to be on set for an hour. Everything is shot in green screen with these this astrology council, and you can tell it feels like very disjointed, like they're not in the same room together. They're all in different scenes. It's very strange. What's
funny is that you say that, and like when we watched the documentary, it did feel disjointed, but I thought watching the movie it actually felt cohesive. It like they shot it and made it look like they were all in one room.
It did look like they were all in one room, but the pacing of it, like one person would say something and then Post Malone would be like, yeah, like, sir, there, you could drive a fucking football field. I don't know. I was trying to make an analogy and it didn't work, but it was like, you could drive a freight train through that pause. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he is just, at one point he says, I want to give her a hug. And he hugs himself. Like, that's not acting, sir. Oh, that's pantomime.
But I would push back and say, like, the entire thing is very kitschy. The entire thing is like, you know what I mean? It's not meant to be serious. If Jennifer Lewis can do Jennifer Lewis, Post Malone can hug himself. Like, that's, it's the same, it's the same genre. It's in the same world.
Okay. Yeah.
she disagrees. I'm pushing back. So before we know it, J-Lo is then getting married. So from on high, the council sees her getting engaged, and then we're thrust into her wedding day, which becomes a real big budget music video moment. This is clearly where they spent a lot of their budget. I mean, the locations are very practical. It's not CGI like the rest of the film. They have dancers and background people galore. In the scene, J-Lo is marrying three different dudes, which I think is a low-key reference to how many times J-Lo has gotten married.
I just want to add the multiple dude thing didn't read for me. I felt like all of a sudden I was like, wait a second, is that a different guy? Like, it wasn't. And why? Like, exactly. Like, they didn't make enough of a dramatic shift to show that these were different weddings. She's in the exact same dress. It's the same location. In the doc, you learn that this is because of budget, that they wanted to have multiple weddings, but they all did them in one place. I would have done something like, maybe the suits are a different color, or maybe in CGI, they could have made the color of her wedding dress different, or something to just show that these were different men. Because like, one was black, the other two were white. They all kind of looked the same. Was that just me? I was
Was just you. You just said one was black and the other two were white. Why? That's different.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but I'm saying that like, it wasn't enough of, they moved so fast. It was like one scene where she was dancing with the black guy and then she's dancing with another. It wasn't clear that those are two different grooms. I just thought, okay, she's dancing with another guy. Like, she's dancing with a white guy. She's dancing with, do you know what I mean? Like, she's dancing with all these people. I didn't know it was different weddings.
Well, and they also released this clip before everything came out, and we were all confused by that. We're like, is she getting married? What's coming out? What's happening with it? But I think what would have helped with that, to your point about the CGI, is like all of this wedding scene was very practical. It was like a set, and they paid money, and there's the flowers are real. But the rest, the whole thing is like CGI. So to your point, why not just create a CGI wedding and have different settings and costumes and all the things, right?
Or do like one proposal, one wedding, one breakup. Sure. Three different guys. Do you know what I mean? Totally. Or something like that would, I think, might have sold it a little bit more. But then we smash cut to couples therapy with all three of the husbands from the wedding scenes, each telling us why the relationship ended in divorce. Then we see her with another boyfriend, younger guy, obviously in the very beginning of the relationship, and the friends decide to stage an intervention. Delon, why are the friends 12 years old?
Yo.
It's like they're on their lunch break from school or something. They're babies compared to her.
They really are. And this was one of the moments, another moment where I was like, oh, this thing is trying really hard to be something that it's not. Because it's so, despite, you know, J-Lo got the airbrushed skin. She got that tight. Mm-hmm. You know, she's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Despite, we could tell that these people were so much younger than her, maturity-wise or energy-wise or whatever.
They didn't feel like friends.
They didn't feel like friends at all. And we only see them in one scene prior to, the wedding scene, right?
Right. We've never, and again, this is that continuity, storytelling, character analysis, all that stuff needs to be there. I don't believe these are her friends. I don't know anything about them or their relationship with her. We've just seen them in proximity to each other. And at the wedding, they're all like, oh God, we're at another wedding. And it's like, that means nothing to me. Yeah. Your whole friend group could be getting married. I don't understand that, like, she has gotten married multiple times. I don't know, like, how y'all feel about it other than, you're staging this intervention, but again, it all happens so fast. It doesn't feel like this has been an ongoing problem in order to show that these people are concerned about it. I also have to say, in the documentary, Ben Affleck says to her, oh, so you're playing yourself as 28 years old. And J-Lo's like, no, this is not me. This is not autobiographical. This is meta. And then like, okay, but you are the one who keeps saying it's inspired by, you can't have it both ways. Either it's about you or it's fictional. Like, it's so wishy-washy.
The thing is, she doesn't know, right? The thing is, she doesn't know. It's not a music video. It's not this. It's not that. She's not in it, but she is. It's based on this. But then she brought the letters that Ben wrote her to write the album, right? So like,
right. Right. And it's based on her. But then when Mark Anthony's friend doesn't want to be in it, he's like, well, I think it's disrespectful to Mark Anthony. And she's like, why? It's not about him. You said that it's inspired by your life. And right. You've got these multiple weddings. Like, we are all thinking about Jennifer Lord of the Rings Lopez. Like, you are always getting engaged and married and divorced. So why wouldn't he think it's about his friend?
Well, and how could we not, knowing that you've been married that many times? How could we not? If you got married once, then maybe that's a different story. But we're automatically going to infer those things based on your history, right? So after this intervention that her friends have with her, we go back to her therapist's office, and J-Lo gives this very emotional monologue where she says, I know what they say about me, about hopeless romantics, that we're weak, but I'm not weak. It takes strength to keep believing in something after you keep falling flat on your face. Strings come in. And I do, Joe. I believe in magic. I believe in things happen if you're a good person. I believe in soulmates and signs and hummingbirds. I believe that love never dies and forever is real as long as I can. Ring, ring. Joe's phone rings and he picks it up and ends the session. Now, this is one of the most realistic moments I found in this film. Ooh. Why? Because it realizes that, like, the soap opera moment she was having is ridiculous. It's not taking itself too seriously. And I just love when art subverts itself like that, because the rest of it is like so earnest and taking itself so seriously, save for the, you know, Zodiac Council in the sky, that I was like, oh, great. You're leaning into this love thing and he's cutting you off. Great.
Yeah.
At least you're aware that it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a very charitable read. I think the therapist thing to me is a little hacky. Like, if you're not, I just feel like it's a cheap way to get story out, because, like, you're talking to a therapist, so I get to hear your thoughts versus you know, if you were actually writing, you'd have to show me your thoughts in creative ways. And oftentimes we don't say out loud how we feel. We do the opposite of how we actually feel, right? Like you're in a fight with your partner and they go, you know, or you're mad at your partner and they say, are you okay? And you go, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. Versus when you're in a therapist, you go, I was really mad about da 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 da. It just feels like lazy writing to me. What I did think was interesting, and I wish they had leaned into, is that her therapist suggests that she go to a Love Addicts Anonymous support group, which then becomes the next big musical sequence. And again, it's that thing where I'm like, I wish J-Lo would commit if this is about her or not, because I kind of think she is a love addict. And I think that she needs to admit that. Like it's usually called like a love and sex addict. It's people who are usually in like serial monogamous relationships. They get obsessive about relationships. They fall way too hard. They can often be like promiscuous and struggle with drug and alcohol. All of this is really interesting and would be a very vulnerable thing to share. But instead, there's this dramatic monologue that is not about being a love and sex addict. And then it turns into a modern dance piece with everybody dancing on chairs to this song, Broken Like Me. And it's like, what is going on? How is dancing on chairs? What does this have to do with you being a love addict? And where did the therapist go? Where did he go?
Well, wait, first you didn't want him. Now you want him back. No,
no, but the therapist was in the circle.
Oh, you mean the therapist in the love addict group? Yes.
They're all in the love and sex addict group. He's this old man. And then all of a sudden they start dancing and he's gone. I thought he was going to be busted.
But, no, he comes back at the end when he asks her at the end if she's coming back. But like he should have been there because, you know, he's the only one speaking other than her in the beginning and welcoming her into it. Yeah, this modern dance thing, it just like it didn't read true. It didn't read coming from story, right?
No.
The dancing was great. The other dancers were fantastic. They're really good at modern dance.
No one is going to doubt. You cannot doubt J-Lo's dance skills. She can dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is it warranted? Is it justified? I don't know. No. This scene is a great example of the conceptual meaning the literal, right? And that it's a great marriage of those two things. But I don't think the song fits the dance.
And I don't think the vocals match the faces that J-Lo is making. Well, she is emoting, like she is belting. She's giving you all these moves as if like she's giving you these big notes and then like no big note comes out.
I mean, listen, sell it, girl. Act. Listen, what do they say? They say in theater, like, wash my hands, not my feet. You know what I mean?
I've never heard that.
Oh, God. Yeah. If you don't tap dance, like, wash my hands and my face, not my feet. You know, like, really fucking sell it. And another rule in musical theater is, like, when you can't... The reason we sing and dance in musical theater is because, like, dialogue doesn't suffice anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, in this, like, group therapy session, it just like the music doesn't swell and like the emotional tension doesn't swell enough to really explode out into song and dance. So you go, okay, now the song's starting. Okay, great. I guess I'll just.
She says
so
nothing.
Weird.
She says nothing in that monologue, and then suddenly
nothing
she's
of consequence.
Dancing.
No,
nothing at all. So then after the group therapy, we've got more CGI. J-Lo is in her spaceship of a house and she's burning love letters and it's raining outside. So her hair is wet, but she's by the fire. The rest of her is nothing else is wet, just the hair. The face is beat. The makeup is flawless.
I mean, they need an award because like banging. Looks unbelievable.
But this is what I'm talking about. Your hair is wet. Your clothes are not. Your face is not wet. And you're by a fire. How is the hair still wet?
I don't know.
She's in a floor-length gown. She is throwing these love letters into the fireplace. In the documentary, we do learn that Ben gave her all these love letters. And so that's, I guess, why she's throwing them in the fire. But again, this is a metaphor that is never explained to the audience. We don't know what these letters are or who they are from. We just know
that her hair is dripping on them.
And she's throwing them away.
It's so weird. I will say, like, the styling in this film is sick. Like, J-Lo is coiffed and spackled and, like, bejeweled throughout the entire thing. She looks amazing.
No, J-Lo's never going to look ugly. And I will add that that's why this also doesn't work. Get ugly sometimes. Get a little roughed up.
And that's because like the commitment, like I said, in that glass house scene, she's so focused on like looking pretty that she can't really like get into the acting. You know what I mean?
Right.
So then we go back to her therapist's office after she's drenched in her big ass house. She's talking to her therapist about this dream she had the night before. Then we go into the dream, and it's a segue reminding us that she is indeed Jenny from the Block. She is from the Bronx, as if we could ever forget. She won't let anybody forget. So in the dream, she's now in the dream. She's walking around in her old neighborhood. She runs into some old friends, and then she stumbles into this like weirdly beat up, abused version of her younger self who tells mm-hmm. her that she didn't get enough love from J-Lo. And it's back to your point, memory, right? If she had the dream, if she went to bed and was having the dream, it would be more plausible than like she's talking about the dream and then we're thrust into the dream. It's a little odd. It's a little odd.
Yeah. And it's even on the nose of like, she's got to talk to her former self. Like if she was really trying to commit to, this is not a music video. Because in a music video, the star has to be in every scene.
Right.
But in a movie, we can do a flashback and the star is not there.
Yeah.
We could have had a flashback with this little girl and the song playing or whatever, but instead she has to talk to her and it's this like, I'm working out something with my inner child. And you know, it just felt like a moment that could have been part, you know, it's like the show not tell type of thing where it's like, you could have shown this through like your actual being and like your evolution as a character rather than now I'm seeing my inner child and I'm hugging my inner child and now my inner child is healed. Like it's so like on the nose.
Yeah.
So there's tears and apologies. And then all of a sudden the two J-Lo's, the adult J-Lo and the little girl J-Lo are in a window and they're singing This Is Me Now and they're running around the Bronx and then they're on a rooftop singing over the island of Manhattan and this is supposedly the high point of the film as evidenced by J-Lo and her inner child standing on a rooftop. Okay, we're getting real literal here. This is a high point. It's really important. And she's belting a song that does not require belting. And then the inner child supposedly is healed because there are rose petals that take us back to the heart.
The little girl like dissolves into rose petals and then the whole frame just like goes back into the factory where J-Lo's managing to save her broken heart and then gets the heart to pump those rose petals again.
And then she gets on another motorcycle and we see half of Ben Affleck's face, face.
Yeah.
So you know it's him, and then they get on a motorcycle and drive away. Like,
oh, and I do forget. She goes back to the therapist's office, and then she's healed from him, I guess, after that too. And then he's like, "Do you want to ride?" And she goes, "No, I'll walk." And he goes, "It's raining." And then she has this whole singing in the rain moment where she's like dancing in the rain.
And a hummingbird visits her in the rain, which is a reference to the story that her family told her as a little girl at the very, we have not seen Miss Hummingbird the whole goddamn movie, but we saw it in the opening credits and now she's like, the hummingbird is here. And then they do a dance in the rain. And then she says to Fat Joe, you never give up, Joe. Never believe in love. What are you fucking talking about?
I mean, here's the thing. When she did have financing for this film before it was pulled. Mm-hmm. And then she invested $20 million of her own money. So when you invest $20 million of your own dollars, I guess you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Of course.
You can create whatever you want. Yeah. But people told her that it was going to be critiqued and people warned her that it was going to be pulled apart because what are you saying? Why are you doing it? The idea that like you love is just, but we're just to save love, Joe. Like it's cliche, you know, it doesn't say anything new about love. And I it's a little masturbatory.
You know, I agree with you, but this is a stark contrast to how you first talked about the film. Cause when we had a discussion, you were saying you liked it.
Wait. Class, don't let her. No. I didn't say that. I said that.
What'd you say?
I said that I appreciated it and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And I'll tell you why though, because you set me up right, friend. You were like, you had watched the movie and you texted me, you're like, did you see this thing? And then you were like, and you watched the doc and you're like, watch the doc first. And I watched the doc first and it created all this empathy and compassion because I saw the struggle. I saw them rejecting her. I saw her her, what would J-Lo do? Blindness. And I was like, oh, I have empathy for her. And then I watched the film and I was like, okay, well, you did a thing. You know, I appreciate the endeavor.
Yeah. I mean, look, I am hoping that somebody gives me $20 million so I can complete something too. because it is obvious, despite our critiques, it is a passion project. And she really, you know, poured her heart into the machine heart with the mud and the dancing. Yes, and, yes. You know, she really went for it. There's an article in IndieWire that called this film a commercial for an album, which I do think is spot on. It's also described as a curious blend of Hallmark movie, music video, and self-help seminar. So clearly we are all confused with how to quantify or classify it. But I mean, at the end of the day, it is a series of music videos strung together with a very loose, I mean, thinner than a frog's hair storyline about the failures of love, I guess.
I totally agree. I know. And like I said, like, if I hadn't watched the documentary before I watched the movie, I would not have had as much appreciation, I guess, for the effort. Because, you know, I don't have $20 million, but if I did, I hope I would create something for myself too, because that shit is hard.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, I have to applaud her for believing in herself. And look, it did pay off because Amazon ended up buying it.
Right.
And despite, you know, the critiques of it, everybody's talking about it. So that is a win in some ways. Lots of people are watching it. Which is the point. When I made my video, I think has like almost 1 million views, and a big chunk of the comments are like, I got to watch this now. And I was like, God damn it. Now I'm on the J-Lo street team, but people are watching it.
You're welcome.
I think this has the potential to be like a cult classic in the way that people watch like Showgirls, and they watch it in, you know, at a big park or, you know, at a house, and everyone does a drinking game or something like that. I could see that happening. I don't think that J-Lo is self-aware enough to like play into that, but maybe in 5 years, 10 years, she'll be down for it, the same way Elizabeth Hurley from Showgirls has really embraced the fact that this film has kind of become this kitschy thing that we all laugh at, but, you know, we love to hate, but we hate to love.
Right. Yeah, I do love when the culture does that, when the culture will like totally pan something, and then it becomes part of like the joke, right? It becomes part of like, oh, remember this thing that we all watched in this era, right? Like, what was the Britney Spears movie, her first
Crossroads?
And only movie, Crossroads is another one of those, right? As Zoe Saldana's in that, but Zoe Saldana is also in that ballet movie.
Center Stage.
That was my first DVD I ever owned. We should watch that. We should review that one.
That's a great one to review.
The acting is not everything, but the dancing and the story is everything.
I agree, but everyone that I know that's an actual dancer hates that movie.
Really?
Because the dancing supposedly is bad.
Well, the lead girls. I mean, no, the ballet is banging, but like when she goes to that, like the class that is supposed to be like the you know, the down low class, like not the not the formal class, and she's like kind of getting it. Oh wait, even better when she does like the formal dance and she breaks out, and everyone's like, she's not that great, y'all. Right? Like she's not killing it.
You know what? The wheels of my brain are turning. I feel like J-Lo, if this movie had been a Center Stage type movie, I feel like it would have been a better movie.
I can get behind that.
Like, just make a dance movie. Like,
I can get behind that.
Cut the singing. Let somebody else write the script and just give us a dance. We're getting ahead of ourselves and jumping to the fix here. But we also definitely should do a Center Stage episode.
Yes.
Do you want to just like jump ahead 1 second to talk about the documentary, because we talked about it throughout the episode, but I'm sure there are some other things that you noticed and would like to share with the class.
Yeah. I really, really, really loved and appreciated the documentary. I just love a documentary. But I also like that we see her kind of being raw and being raw and being genuine and struggling. Because that's what I'm interested in. But really, my biggest takeaway from it is how much Ben Affleck loves that woman.
We have clowned this relationship because, you know, every time there's paparazzi photos, Ben looks disheveled and unhappy. But the reality is, no, I think he's just an old alcoholic white man. And so he looks rough when you see him.
But I mean, has he ever looked great in pictures? Has he ever been like, oh, I'm really happy to be here?
No, he in his heyday, he was a. I thought he was a handsome man.
I don't
in his
think
heyday.
He's unattractive. I don't think he's unattractive now. I'm just saying, like him, like wanting to be there next to her. He's kind of like, oh, this is her thing.
Even if he's just like standing outside smoking a cigarette, he looks miserable. He always looks unhappy. And there's this like prevailing joke that he hates being married to her. But to your point, in the documentary, you see he really fucking loves. They are in love, 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 love.
Like, I mean, it's so clear that he says multiple times he does not want to be in the documentary. And yes. He's just not sure why she's doing this, but he's clearly doing it. He's even behind the camera in some of the scenes
He says very poignantly, and I'm probably going to butcher this quote, but he says something like, you know, I didn't want to be in this because the first time we were together, the media scrutiny really hurt our relationship. And when we got back together, I said, I don't want to do the social media. I don't want to do the media of it all. And he said, but it's kind of like dating a sea captain and saying that you don't like the water. Mm. You just have to do the thing. And like, to your point about like, he doesn't want to be in it. But he's in it because he loves Jennifer Lopez. And he's like, this is what she wants to do. And she has many moments where she's nervous about the movie not being good. And he's consoling her.
He's just coaching her through it. He's coaching her right through it.
Well, you know, he's coaching her in that bedroom, too.
Yo,
I can tell.
They fuck. They fuck like the Obamas fuck. You know.
Oh, Delon. Delon.
You can't tell me that the Obamas don't fuck.
They do, but I mean, they have two children. We know they have, the deed has been done. I don't want to think about the two of them.
Listen, Prudy. I'm just, the point is when people are that affectionate and you can actually see the visceral, like connection of their love, you're like, oh, you know, they get down.
Ooh,
you
the know room they is stank. Just, ooh.
See, there she is. She came back out. The room is funky.
Oh, I know. The room is funky. I know. Listen, I saw Hustlers, and when J-Lo was swinging on that pole, I said, "What girl, why did I ever think I was a heterosexual?" She was insane. Body. I mean, just sex appeal.
A small tangent on Hustlers. She was nominated for an Oscar for that, right?
No, she was not.
Oh, she was nominated for other awards.
She was upset that she didn't get nominated for
an
Oscar.
What did she get nominated for?
She campaigned her... I don't know, but she campaigned her ass off and she really thought she was about to get that Oscar.
She was in the pool, right? There was a conversation, she was campaigning, right? But
yes,
like,
because there's an actress round table that she's very cringy in.
Okay. Anyway, the acclaim was critical, right? We all agreed like she was really great acting work despite her just being beautiful and being J-Lo, she acted very well and she got a lot of accolades for it. And I thought it was like a new chapter for her.
Me too.
And so I, coming into This Is Me Now, a love story and all of this, I'm like, it feels like a step back.
Hustlers showed us a different side of her acting wise. It showed us range. And then it felt like she should have done something a little bit more prestige after that.
Maybe this should have been a little more elevated, right? Like This Is Me Now, Love Story should have felt a little more elevated. What other takeaways did you have from the doc?
I agree with you about the Ben Affleck of it all. It really made me like him. I never really had strong feelings about him, but like, man, he just seems so genuine. And I love all the little snippets with them where like the camera's kind of far away and they're just talking to each other. And it's like, they're in their own little world. Like you could just really tell they love each other.
They love each other.
They really do. I loved Jane Fonda. There's a really hilarious moment where she doesn't understand one of the lines and J-Lo's trying to explain what being thirsty is. Mm-hmm. And J-Lo's like, you know, like when you post on Instagram too much, and Jane Fonda goes, you mean like you? Like you. It's so, so funny. But yes, I also walked away from the doc. You know, my review that I made was snarky, but in reality, I really did finish that film and I felt really inspired to just try a little harder and believe in myself a little bit more and just have what some people have been calling J-Lulu. Just be a little Jennifer Lopez DeLulu. You know, delusional.
I can't with the internet. J-Lulu. I cannot with the internet.
Oh,
y'all
my God,
be coming up with all of it. Y'all,
I love it.
All of it.
Now, class, that we have tapped into the lows and the highs of This Is Me Now, a love story, it's time for us to fix it. But first, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hmm.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And we're back. Dawn, do you mind if I go first?
Not at all.
So I kind of touched on this a little bit, but I feel like she should have just gone full performance art, lose the dialogue, lose the singing. This could have been cool as like a staged dance performance with like a film capture and an orchestra. She is a great dancer. And I think that like the dialogue of it all is so bad, but like you could have just cut it and made it like a cool conceptual funky thing that like we as the audience have to piece the story together. That I think could have been very interesting. And, you know, people like stuff that kind of is boundary breaking in that way, especially since she's so insistent on it's not a movie or a musical or a music video, then like really do something different. Or I would say actually hire someone to write the movie. You know, I think she had a kernel of an interesting idea with the love and sex addict part of it all. But she's trying to say the thing without saying the thing. And again, she's trying to do too many things at once. So a movie that was really about J-Lo's journey as someone who realized like she needs to be single. The problem is like J-Lo in real life is not single. So like, right. You know, she's giving us the story where like in the movie, she's like, I'm going to be by myself and I'm not going to marry anybody. But then like,
but I'm married.
But I'm married, you know? So again, I feel like someone who's an actual writer could have pieced something together in that way. But the alternative is just go full dance. That's where she really shines.
The first pitch, they would have roasted her ass. I'm sorry. If she went performance art, it would have literally become a Christopher Guest film, a Waiting for Guffman.
I would argue that's what this is too. I think that's what she still got.
Sure. But I will say, like, I hear you on like the idea, right? I hear you, but like I feel like you have to like think outside of the box for that. You have to be like, it's not literal at all. So what could I do? What is the visual? Like the CGI, like the illustration you talked about, we talked about the very beginning, is so stunning and so beautiful. Like how can that infuse into something?
Maybe the whole thing should have just been like an animated feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of making it so, because the animated portion is the story of like this, they're lovers who can't be together and one becomes a hummingbird looking for the flower or whatever. And like, maybe that should just been the whole movie. Like, give us that story and really say, it's not about me. It's inspired by how much I love and this beautiful, fable from, you know, that I heard when I was growing up in the Bronx. You remember I'm from the Bronx. This is one that we told on the block. You know what I mean? I don't fucking know. But I loved the illustrations of that. It was really, really beautiful. And a whole feature film in that style, I think, would have been really cool.
Yeah. And I think I agree with that. I think if she leaned into that and made it even an adult version of that, right? Because like we also go to see Pixar movies and things like that. And I feel like Invincible is like a comic book illustration cartoon that was really good on Amazon.
Yeah, there's a number of them.
Like there are a lot more adult cartoons that are coming out that I really think it could have like done really well if she'd lead into that.
Yeah, there's, you know, BoJack Horseman is a comedy, but it does get pretty dark and dramatic at times. And there was also another one on Netflix recently that Jessica Williams was in and Kid Cudi was in really, really cool. Yeah. So I think you're right. It doesn't have to be children's booky. It could be an adult animated feature. And to your point about doing something different and kind of like pushing the boundaries, that would be different and unexpected. And I think a big part of the problem with this piece is it's trying so hard to be different that it ends up just falling into a bunch of tropes.
Yeah.
And the thing a lot of people kept saying is, J-Lo was trying to give us Lemonade, but instead she gave us Agua Fresca. And like, it's just not, it's just not, like, not, it's not being fresca. Compared.
not Fresco.
It's being compared, right?
I mean, and like, well, it does feel like an answer to Lemonade. Let's be honest, right? But but the, Lemonade again, like if we're gonna compare it, is visuals. It's a visual album because it's not a literal story. It's just right. ideas visually that she's giving you.
Right.
And back to the cartoon of it all, I do think you can get away with so much more in a cartoon than you can in a literal reality. So that would have really allowed the sweater to be pushed out a little bit more for her. She'd have more room, you know?
Yeah, I agree. What's your fix?
So for me, I was so much more interested in the making of documentary than the actual film that I think she should have leaned into that more. I was thinking, like, what if the whole first part of the film was the documentary and then the latter half was the actual product. So like very much like Making the Music Video. What was that MTV show? Making the Video.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Making the Video. You'd see like how all of the parts of like the Britney Spears, like not Hit Me, but what was the one when she was wearing the red suit?
Oops, I did it again.
I remember watching that one and being like, blow my mind, you know?
Yeah.
You watch the whole making of that video and then you see it at the end. I think there would have just been more mileage out of that. And again, she'd have to truncate it and you'd see like, oh, the personal part of it, the personal struggle to get there. And again, I had more empathy and compassion for her, the effort with which it took to get there.
Yeah.
So I think it would have had more leeway and leverage for me anyway. Also,
yeah,
like,
that's really smart.
Yeah. Also, there's just like, it's so masturbatory. It's just like such a masturbation. And there's, I get it. Like, as an artist, you want to create the thing you want to create. You want to say the thing you want to say. I totally get that. But I think the story could have used a B storyline, like one of her friends, you know?
Literally.
And then, like, how do you tether them together? And that only emphasizes your A storyline even more with a B storyline, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so taking the focus off of her would have helped a little bit more. Those would be my two fixes because. Again, to your point, I hope it does become a cult classic, a Showgirls. I hope so.
I think it's on its way there because there's so many unintentionally hilarious moments in the documentary that then, to your point, I do think like bolster the actual film. So I think it's a future double feature.
Woo!
You watch them back to back. You have moments where we shout at the screen and we pretend to be Ben. And I just, I think it's great.
I can't wait for the Halloween costumes dressed as all the costumes J-Lo was wearing in the show. There's one moment where she's like giving that like dramatic monologue and she's in an endangered species t-shirt with all these jewels and it's and with the dog. I see the costume already.
Oh God, the blood sniffing hound dog. Just get out of here.
Cute dog,
or the love sniffing dog.
Get out. So now it's time for everyone's segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who have turned themselves around without our help. I'll take this one first, if you don't mind, Fran.
Go for it.
Okay, so I'm giving this up to dog whistles because they are out here again. First it was CRT with the critical race theory, and now it's DEI. Mm-hmm. They're passing all of these laws. There are nine different bills in different state houses, primarily in the South, where they're trying to pass anti-DEI laws, DEI being diversity, equity, inclusion. Alabama just passed a law, and the right MAGA people are calling it didn't earn it. The new acronym is didn't earn it. And
it's such bullshit, too, because I'm sorry, a lot of y'all did not earn shit. You literally stormed in here and stole somebody else's land, and now you want to talk about didn't earn it.
Billions of acres of land, 300 years of free labor, women couldn't have credit till 1974,
literally.
Asian people couldn't come in until 1965. Like, what are you actually talking about? Well, it's projection is what it is, right? It's projection. Because despite all of the things that have been put in our way, we have still succeeded. We still created the stoplight. We still created peanut butter. We still became the president. We still did all of it. And you can't handle that, right?
Yeah.
So I follow this woman, Brittany Packett, on Instagram, who like really put a fine point on it for me hilariously and cogently. She was like, it must be so hard to be like, we hate you, we hate you, hate you, you're terrible. And we've surmounted all of the things you put in our way. We've created all of this culture, and then your children want to be us.
Yeah.
I was like, it's
they
so true.
They want to dress like us. They want to talk like us. They want to fucking get stuff put in their lips so that they look better.
Talk about it.
Fuller.
BBLs.
They want to get BBLs. They want to do their nails like us. They're spending hours in the salon to make their hair look kinky. I mean, it's crazy. Oh, gosh.
Yes. All over the place. it's crazy. So, I mean, listen, I'm not pushing back on it. I'm just pointing it out. And I'm just saying, mm-hmm. y'all, you know what? Keep going. Yep. Keep going. Keep saying we didn't earn it, because we're just going to continue doing what we do, continue thriving and continue earning it. So glow up, y'all. Go ahead.
Well, to your point, though, about the dog whistle of it all is they're not even trying to like make it. They don't even, it's like, did you see the thing of like the Baltimore Bridge went down?
Oh my God.
Then the mayor makes a statement and they're all going, this is a DEI mayor. It's like, you're just calling him hard R N-word.
Like, well,
for the mayor. You vote for the mayor. It's not a diversity, equity, inclusion position. He won that seat. Like 70% of the votes went to him. Like, how are you calling this a DEI hire? Calling him black.
Well, he was on the readout with mm-hmm. Joy Reid, and she allowed him to like kind of clap back and talk about it. One of the things he said is like, you know, they've made young black men the boogeyman since the beginning, and they're mm-hmm. they need a boogeyman. They're going to continue to make us the boogeyman. I'm going to continue to be the mayor of Baltimore and do what I need to do. And it's the same thing. Like, the only thing we have is to continue to push back and continue to thrive and exist as much as we can. There's some expats moving to Mexico. Some black people are moving to Mexico to get away from it. But like, that's the only thing that we can do. You know, it's because it's crazy. And to your point about how crazy it's getting, I think looking at it now, everyone is going, this is ridiculous. This is actually ridiculous. And I think the country, I hope at like en masse, is going to be eventually eclipse these people and be like, we're done with that. We're going to expel this. We're no longer doing it. You know?
Yeah. They're just becoming more and more ridiculous because they did the same thing with woke. They just started calling everything woke. Totally. And then you would ask them, what does that mean? And they'd be like, they couldn't even tell you.
They asked him, he was like, well, you don't even know.
He literally could not tell you what it meant. So you're right. Dog whistles are out here everywhere you turn, but they are falling apart, and that's the silver lining.
Right. So what's your glow up this week?
My glow up goes to measles. We are bringing measles back, y'all.
We've been doing it for a minute, haven't we? this is a pre-pandemic bring back glow up, though. This has been happening since like 2019.
Oh, listen, measles is doing numbers out here. They have spiked in the past 3 months.
Wow.
They have been driven by outbreaks in Chicago, Southeast Florida, daycare in Philadelphia. We have had a record 63 cases in the year 2024.
Wow.
And we have already surpassed 2023's record of 59 cases. And the year is not even over yet, okay? The culprit are these anti-vaxxers. Y'all, vaccinate your children. What are y'all doing, okay? Your immune system cannot... We got rid of measles before, and now y'all are bringing it back, okay?
It's just crazy, man.
Your kindergartners should be getting those two vaccines so that they don't get measles. Today, 1 in 5 unvaccinated people end up getting measles and go to the hospital, and roughly 1 in 3 out of every 1,000 children with measles will die.
Wow.
You are putting your child in danger for something that is very easily taken care of. Just get the shot.
Well, what's crazy about this for me is that I've talked to people who are like, not anti-vaxxers, but like they're anti-flu shot, right? But it's the same ilk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know what's in that. I'm not going to put that in my body. But I'm like, but you're over here drinking a vodka tonic. But you're over here eating that bag of Doritos, right?
Yeah.
But your kid just picked that chicken bone up, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are you...
Literally have seen you do a bump off of a toilet in a fucking dive bar. Like, you are not...
You just made out with that chick, right? You don't even know what she got. You know what I'm saying?
You don't know that person's name, and y'all are sucking and fucking the amount of people that you are raw dogging in these streets.
Listen.
And you want to talk about what's in a vaccine?
I mean, it's so backward. It's just so backwards.
It makes no sense. And look, if you don't want to get a flu shot, don't get a flu shot. Fine. But measles? some shit that is, I mean, again, and the flu can kill you. Do not get me wrong. The flu can absolutely kill you. But the measles, I mean, it was devastating when it was running rampant. And this goes to show you that the fucking vaccines work. This is not some new thing that's happening. And it's just, it blows my mind that someone can watch like a 60-minute YouTube video from some weirdo in his basement. And suddenly they're like, you know what? I'm not going to get a measles shot. It's like, who are your sources?
Well, and I guarantee you, well, here's the course of action. There's a course of events, right? They're going to get measles. They're going to be sick. They're going to go to an emergency room or the doctor, and they can be like, what am I going to do? And they'll be like, no. You should have got a fucking vaccine is what you should have done.
No, honestly, honestly, if you decide that you don't want to get, you know, vaccinated for measles or polio or any of those things, you should sign a form that says, if I get this thing, because if you are so distrusting of the vaccine, to your point, Delon, why are you now trusting of the doctors to that help part. You recover from the thing that you could have just avoided by getting the fucking vaccine?
Right. It's just, like, it's this weird moral righteousness or righteousness period that I don't understand, and like needing to take a stand and stand for something. Great. Yeah. But like it loses the humanity of it, the collective global citizenship, right? Because if you're sending your kid to school with measles or a cold, I don't know how measles represents, but whatever, you're sending your kid to school sick, which we did in the 2000s before the pandemic. But and a measles outbreak happens because you chose not to get your kid vaccinated. What about those other parents? What about those other families? You would want that done to you. Where's like the empathetic forethought for other people? We don't have that. We've lost it.
Yeah. We've you and I have talked about that. And that's not to say that it's unique to the United States, but that feels like a very deeply American thing of like, well, I got mine. I care about me and not anybody else.
I already had COVID. I don't need a mask.
I don't even need, exactly. I don't feel sick. Like, well, other people are immunocompromised. Can you think about them? Nope. Other people's kids. Nope. I don't care. I think you were the person that mentioned some study that asked parents if your kid would be the same as everybody or better than everybody and everybody would be lower, what would you choose? And far and away, most of the parents were like, I want my kid to be the best. Yeah,
it was like, would you want your kid to be like just slightly smarter than everyone in their class or on the same level as everyone in their class? And 70 some odd percent said that they would want their kid to be slightly better. Why? Why do you do that?
It's just, it's to your point earlier, it's like a weird superiority thing. And it's just, it breaks my heart that we can't give people like an empathy vaccine. I wish we could just give them a little shot of some empathy so you would care.
Take some of mine. I got too much. Take some of mine. I'll give it away for free.
Now that is real. Oh my God.
It's debilitating.
It sure is. Well, class, we've come to the end of our show, and now we would like to hear from you. Did you watch This Is Me Now or The Greatest Love Story Never Told? That, of course, was told because they did make a documentary about it. And what would you do to make it better? Tell us. And which passion project would you like to throw $20 million behind? Or maybe you would like to suggest a TV show, a celebrity, or a brand that we should fix in a future episode? Hit us up on Instagram at FixItPod or email us letmefixitpod@gmail.com.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app. I'm DeLon.
And I'm Francesca. And this was
Let Me Fix It!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.